Just whacked me with that leaf.
Sorry.
For the water cooler chat.
Yep. Test, test, test.
Hello and welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast that explores the wondrous world of food, culture, and innovation. We'll take a deep dive into the stories and amazing people behind the food we eat. Think decadent melting cheese oozing over a podcast microphone, in a field, on a piano, with a velvety Merlot in hand. This is Food for Thought.
Today we're joined by Simon Anderson on the Food for Thought podcast. Simon started his career in food halls as Chief Operating and Creative Officer at Marker Halls and is now a food hall consultant with Ideas FC, sharing his experience and industry wisdom as he works on multiple projects in the UK and internationally. Simon, welcome to the Food for Thought poddy.
Hello.
How's your morning been?
It's been good. Bit of a cycle, always good to get started in the morning, but very good.
I try and get the steps in these days because I'm worried that because the way that I treat my body, that heart disease will come on quite early. So I try and get 10,000 steps in as fast as I can.
Yeah, well, I think professionally, I'm actually just, everything I do sort of gives you, is aimed towards giving me heart disease. So yeah, so anything I can do to counter that is always a good idea.
Yeah, I just find that in London, I walk so much, which is great, especially when the weather's like this, which is usually unheard of.
Well, yeah, no, it's been an amazing Indian summer. So it has been lovely for the last few weeks. So we might as well enjoy it while we can.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you step into the world of hospitality and specifically food halls?
My journey's a bit of a different one to most people, actually. I started life working in the advertising and marketing industry.
Yeah.
So I was like a media planner buyer and did lots of things in that sort of space. And I created a digital marketing agency way back in the day, sort of really early doors.
Yeah.
So kind of like 94, 95, so very early. And then I built that company. I worked for sort of various big agencies like Saatchi & Saatchi.
Oh, nice.
Like that.
Yeah.
And then created my own agency, which I sold. And it had a very strict non-compete clause, which I took very literally.
Yeah.
And so with the sale of the company, I bought a pub with a couple of friends. And that turned out to be very successful and ended up winning like the best Southern Legend at the Observer Food Award and things like that.
So when you transitioned from the digital agency that you started to the pub, how old are you roughly there?
It was a while ago now. It was about sort of 15 years ago. Mid-30s or something like that. So did that. And then from that sort of invested in a few kind of restaurant businesses. One of those, which was one of the really kind of early iterations of street food in the UK.
Yeah.
So it was something called Pick You, which became very, like a bit of a phenomenon, very successful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like one of the first restaurants everyone used to queue around the corner to get in.
Yeah, it's a good look.
Yeah, it was really, yeah. Yeah, just don't put many seats in and just make people queue, then it turned into a great business. But the food was awesome, and it was like, I was reminiscing about it the other day, actually, because, you get your reminders pop up on your Facebook and thing. And there was one point where the Zigat guide came out, and we were rated higher than the Fat Duck, which we all thought was hilarious.
Whoa.
So that was quite cool. From that, I kind of just was investing and working in lots of other sort of different restaurant businesses. And then I got a call from some property people I knew, actually, and they recommended me to some other guys who were from a property background, and they had seen things that were happening in Portugal. So Andy, who was the founder of Michael's, actually was living in Portugal, and so he'd seen the success at Time Out, and they were saying, look, there's nothing like this in London. And I was introduced to them as the food and hospitality side because they were property guys.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, well, what would we need to do to create this kind of business? And that was the journey, really. So that's it. So
that's a really fascinating journey. Like, because do you remember there being many transferable skills from a digital marketing agency to a pub?
I was always shocked when I moved into the hospitality industry, how certain elements were very backwards. So, there wasn't, even back then, there wasn't yet. If someone could use a spreadsheet, you were kind of on a winner.
Yeah.
I've always been interested in the kind of the tech side and the digital side and the kind of how that could be brought through. So the marketing principles were good to bring across.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the frustrations I had with the sort of the whole advertising and digital industry was you create stuff and you never really see your results. You see results on paper and you might see those in sales. And what I loved about hospitality and what I still love about hospitality is that instant You can see that people love what they're doing. You can walk around your space and you can see people enjoying it.
Yeah.
And so adding that extra level of humanity to it is the perfect mix for me.
That's a really good point, actually.
That's the bit I really love.
You get that immediate reward visually.
Yeah, and that's it.
In advertising, it's very difficult to quantify if it's a billboard or...
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you struggle, you know, you force your quantification because that's how you get paid. So yeah, it works for
you.
It's totally work if you use the client.
You're measured on efficacy with, you know, advertising in a way that's like very difficult to prove.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the immediacy of hospitality is addictive. So once you do it, so that had me hooked as soon as I started doing it. And so you start getting those results and you open a place that's loved and, you know, it's like creating a piece of art.
Yeah.
You know, it's people follow it, collect it. They want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
They want to kind of, you know, they want to wear the t-shirt. They want to, it's kind of addictive.
When that affinity develops or that sort of cultish vibe, it's like really exciting to be a part of.
And it's great to share those kind of things and sort of do that. And I love that. I had an art gallery for a while and I've done lots of different
You've
things.
You've done all the coolest shit.
I do, yeah. Yeah, I've been,
basically.
Yeah, so I think, I do lots of stuff. I try and do stuff that I find interesting and fun. And so, I've been very lucky to
When you're at the advertising company, you like always down the boozer.
That was the whole sort of thing. You know, when you worked at Saatchi's, there was actually a pub in the car park. We had our own pub.
Really?
The Pregnant Man.
That's
awfully
dangerous. So, yeah.
That advertising in the 90s was a very different ballgame.
Yeah.
So you almost had to, it was almost part of your training was to be able to sort of hold a drink.
Was it a bit of a Mad Men vibe?
It was the last throes of, you know, there was certain last throes of that. But then, of course, you get to go on amazing lunches. So that was another part of it.
Absolutely.
So you'd have, I remember having my first Michelin star lunch and sort of...
Yeah.
Really, you know, going, oh my God, what is this kind of...
Do you remember where that was?
It was at, what was it called? It was on Charlotte Street. It was amazing. I had one of the best lamb dishes I've ever eaten. It was Pied de Terre.
Okay. Yeah.
So it would have been when...
Is this with a client sort of thing?
Yeah, it would have been when Tom Atkins was the chef, I think. So that was really amazing.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And so... You know, whereabouts did you grow up? Like, what do you think, you know, it was about you that made you want to, as an adult, move into that field? Like,
I'm from Birmingham originally.
Yeah.
Which is quite a kind of cool town and sort of, you know, amazing people.
Yeah, I love Birmingham.
Brummie. I didn't go to university.
Because it wasn't for you. I mean, you're obviously very intelligent and savvy.
My background. I come from my background. It wasn't a kind of
wasn't a
university kind of background.
Yeah.
But I was quite entrepreneurial and did lots of different things. Got involved in clubs.
Yeah.
Got into sales in that side of it. So I was actually, you know, one of the only outlets you could get into was I actually sold Yellow Pages, which I think was my first job, proper job.
Oh, like sold the space.
So selling which is like the hardest job in the world,
terrible.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then because I was quite good at selling advertising, I actually then became quite good at sort of on the other side. So I flipped. So I started buying advertising. So that's how I got into advertising. I flipped from being the seller to being the client, and then that started that journey on in that sort of that space. Yeah. So I was brought on board really to sort of from the hospitality perspective. So how would a food hall work on from providing food and the brands that would come involved, and that's sort of the side that I took over. So that was the operations and the creative side. So the creation of the brands, the setup of it operationally.
Yeah.
And I worked on that sort of side of it.
So what piqued your interest there? Like, what made you think that this is something that's going to flourish? That, you know, the food hall sort of aspect of.
I think it was seeing sort of the early success of street food. So you know, I'd a very good friend of mine. And I did have like a Beatles moment where he did ask me to invest like a very small sum of money, and I said no, I'm going to do it. So my friend Dom calls IT Create Street Feast.
Yeah.
So there was some success going on with that. I'd actually seen a site in the city which I thought when we were sort of doing pit key sort of days that I thought would be cool is if you had like you know three or four. It was big enough to have three or four little kitchens, which when, you know, looking back on it, actually would have been a food hall, but that was kind of really early days.
Yeah, yeah.
And then sort of go, we did a few research trips, so going to like America and looking at what's happening in New York, and you could really just get a sense of that this, there was something that could be galvanized into something that was going to be proved to be successful.
And I suppose it makes a lot of sense, like just on in the most basic anthropological sense of to go somewhere and have several options of different cuisines from different walks of life that when you're with a group of people. So
yeah, it is. I mean, it, I think, you know, if you look at what's driving the success of food halls, it's probably, it probably falls into four sort of categories. So you've four reasons is choice. You know, is people that ability to go to a place where you can choose different types of cuisine, you can cater to all different need states, whether it's, you know, lunch, dinner, evening, breakfast, whatever you want, that you can get taken care of in one place. You can there's not many places where you can comfortably go as a single, a group, as a couple, as a family. So they cater for all of those sort of elements.
The demographics wide.
They're completely, I mean, that's demographics. And that to me is always, you know, one of the most successful things with a food hall. What I kind of love is when you do look across a successful food hall, you know, you'll see workers, you'll see suits, you'll see old, you'll see young, you'll see families. Everyone can enjoy the space and can get up in the on the vibe of what it's all about. And then so with that variety and choice is great. And it ties into what I always call a democratic way of dining. Again, from that style, it's tapped into something else now, which is more important than it probably was sort of 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Is economics as well. So you can go to a food hall as a group. And, you know, traditionally, if you go and you have the, you know, the argument about who's paying the bill at the end, and someone's had the steak and someone's had the salad. So the food hall allows you to do that in a group environment that you can go. And then there's no stigma that if it's 2 days before your payday and you go and order, you know, you just have a bowl of chips or something, and that comes because you've ordered it. It comes to you, you go get it, or it gets brought to you. And no one really then has anything about it. So, you know, there's a real, it kind of suits the economic style at the moment. And I think people like that as well.
I agree with that.
People like removing the kind of, because I think people do, people are very conscious of it, I think, when you're out in a group environment. And, you know, in terms of, you know, if they're watching their way or if they're don't like certain types of food. And it allows people to just do what they want. Yeah. And I think that suits the way that we are.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it allows for that, you know, there's value in food halls. You know, you can if you create a food hall correctly, you can control the prices to make sure that it's accessible for everyone, but then you've still got sort of quality and more kind of, you know, highly priced items on there as well. And then that allows you to tie into the other key area for food halls, probably is like the community and socialisation. They allow you the ability to kind of pull people together. They can sit within their community. And the most successful food halls, and probably where if you look at the way that the journey has progressed, particularly in the kind of regional food hall. So if you look at something like Altrincham, that has really built a community and a following and has reinvigorated a town. And you're seeing that happening a lot more. And then that allows it to be really become an identity of where it's from, which is really great.
Yeah.
And then so they can, you know...
put it on the map.
Yeah, but we'll see strands. And we can talk about the way that you know, you're seeing different kinds of food halls develop. And then lastly, I mean, there's not many places where you can create that can be really experientially led.
Yeah.
So, you know, food halls allow themselves to add other elements to them that make them more than just a restaurant.
Yeah.
So a restaurant, you know, a great restaurant, you're going for the experience of eating that cuisine, which has been created by a chef with an amazing vision who wants to express a story, and you eating it is the completion of that experience for them. That's what you're enjoying.
Yeah.
With a food hall, you can create everything else that can be done there. So from, you know, from competitive socializing to events to partnerships. I saw something today actually, which I think is, you know, I'm gonna probably write about it later, which is like the cleverest or the best collaboration I've seen. So the Birmingham Royal Ballet, you know, which is one of the best premier ballet companies in the country, is doing an event at the Digbeth Dining Club, and they are doing a ballet of Black Sabbath. So you couldn't, you know.
Oh, so you've got, yeah, you do choreography.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've, so I don't know. I've got a research, but I think it's a Black Sabbath.
That's a
ballet.
Genius idea.
So I think there's a Black Sabbath ballet in place. So I tell you, so you've got a Birmingham food hall with a Birmingham Ballet Company against one of Birmingham's best ever bands,
yeah,
all coming together in a place where you just wouldn't, you wouldn't think of street food and ballet,
yeah,
but it's sold out. And I think it's the second year they've done it as well, so that, so it's like completely sold out over a couple of nights. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
so
rightfully
you,
so.
Yeah, you can...
The ballet to War Pigs or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So the ability to have a large space that is flexible, that a food hall gives you, to do stuff into them, again, is another way that it kind of, they're really cool.
Yeah. And so somewhere along your journey, like, you were sort of a chief operating officer for Market Halls.
Yeah.
So what era would that have been?
So I was there literally from sort of day one. So from an idea on a page, it wasn't called Market Halls, it was called something else.
Yeah.
So from that, from creating through the brand, curating all the offerings, really taking care of the operational side. Andy and the team there, they found they were amazing property people, so they found some great sites,
yeah,
and continue to do. So that was it. So I saw them through. I left just before COVID, actually, about
yeah,
that sort of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I was there, you know, pretty much for those formative years over the first, I mean, I think we already bought three or four sites.
Yeah.
And then I went off to do consultancy in other areas and sort of.
Do you think much has changed since then to now? Your specificity in the industry, do you think that has changed since your time at Market Hall?
No, the only thing that's changed is sort of, you know, if you were going back to sort of 2018, 2019, there was more money.
Yeah.
So that you were... That you could find more funding or investment. And I think all that's changed now is that it's probably a better market now, actually, in terms of where we are in some areas, but more difficult in others. So I think people are, you know, when you're creating something new, and Market Halls really was, there were a few catalysts for the development of the food hall sort of industry as we know it. So you had... sort of altering a market, which started about 2017, which set off the kind of regional explosion. You had Time Out in Lisbon, which opened about the same time, which really sort of lit the fire of the larger scale sort of destination-based food hall.
Yeah.
And then Market Halls opened, and that was really... And then you sort of had Box Park as well, which sort of, you know, which is... You know, in its first iteration, potentially wasn't, you know, your typical food hall, but it adopted food and drink quite early on to add value, and then that sort of set it off. And then you had the street food markets, so things like Street Feast and those things going on,
yeah,
and London Union and how that developed. But Michael's was really the first that was the kind of an iteration that was in a couple of stunning buildings. Hugely popular and busy,
yeah,
easily visited by every estate agent, council, other person from all over the country. So Market Hall was sort of, that was the kind of the one where everyone, I think, where people really got it for the first time.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, had lots of people copying it, lots of other people going on, lots of other sort of replicas. COVID hits, shuts the kind of the market down.
Yeah.
And then as... The interesting thing is, COVID didn't, or lockdown didn't affect food halls as badly as everyone thought it was going to do.
Yeah.
And they actually, most of them were really smart. A lot of them were run by really, you know, kind of caring and did all the right things during that process. Some didn't, some did.
Yeah.
So a lot of the other food halls that had developed in that time came back really strong.
Yeah, that's really, I would never have thought that, which is really, they must have been very clever with that, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and they had the flexibility, a lot of them had the flexibility to pivot, so they could other people to delivery, they had the ability to utilise the space for other things, so they could do that, they could open shops, they could do other things with their space.
I feel like the hospitality industry in general through that time was, you know, incredibly innovative, like to figure out how to keep businesses, you know.
Yeah, and so when they came back, I mean, you know, for the first couple of months, the first 6 months, it was, you know, it was kind of, again, everyone was finding their feet, didn't know what they were going to do. But then since COVID, I would argue that the market, the food hall sector, is probably the healthiest hospitality sector that's out there.
Yeah.
So if you look at the growth of the number of food halls, I think we're currently sitting at about, you know, if you, there's a few classifications, and I tend to use this broad classification of multi-vendor operations.
Yeah, yeah.
So that can cover off a food hall, a traditional market,
yeah,
a stacked
kind of box park or stacks concept of that's as sort of the containers around a crate field or whatever. If you look at that, there's probably trading at this moment probably about 100. Somewhere that, you know, it 80. If you look at your more traditional indoor-y sort of food hall-y places, about 100 spaces.
Yeah.
But over that time, since the beginning of that, only 3 food halls have closed, of which 2 are currently kind of, 2 are sort of landlord disputes and will potentially be coming back quite soon. Now, if you compare that to the restaurant industry, where the closure rate and the pub industry, the closure rate is quite dramatic.
Yeah, of course.
So food halls have managed to sustain their feasibility and have remained opened and continue to grow. So there's currently, that I'm aware of, probably 20 food halls in development at the moment in the UK, of which more than half of those are over 20,000 square feet.
Yeah.
So the predicted numbers for are kind of 200 by 2025, 2028. But I think it could be higher.
Yeah.
So
With like the cost of goods and that sort of thing, what do you think it is about the sort of food hall type financial model that makes it a little bit more feasible?
Well, I think that goes back to the effect of COVID and sort of the changes that we're currently seeing on the high street and the way that a lot of our cities are being run. So what you've seen over the last sort of 2 years was a kind of change in the deal types.
Yeah.
So as the high streets are losing their department stores, they're losing their large stores.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of council buybacks, so council buying back buildings. You're seeing a lot of developers coming into high streets and buildings where they're looking for different uses for town centres. Mm. Your price points, you need to look at something that's that's competitively priced. You don't want to overprice yourself. You want something that allows you to be part of a bigger dining experience. So always be aware, look at what other people are charging, make sure you're competitively priced, and make sure you're kind of reasonable from that sort of basis. Then it's kind of, those are the kind of things. If you get that kind of the price point, the offer, the menu size, that's it. You be very focused on your staffing. You don't need to overstaff. You need to make sure that those sensible choices. The great benefit of food halls is you can run them very lean. If you're a kitchen in a food hall, so keeping on top of those, and then that allows you to build a business on which you can grow from. There's so many success stories of people that have really started successfully in food halls and gone on to bigger areas and create restaurants and moved on from there. So those are the sort of key areas that you want to try and build upon.
Well, what do you think, what would you do if you were in that situation and you were going to be an operator? What do you think you would do?
Me, if I was going to create a brand that goes into a food hall, I would create, for me, well, me personally, I would, to me, I think if you wanted something that was sort of generic, then the kind of stuff, it's difficult for me because I kind of love Korean food, but I'm the least Korean person that you could probably ever meet. So I probably wouldn't do that. I know barbecue meat in pubs works quite well for me.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of really great British food in food halls.
Yeah.
Which, I developed this whole concept, which was a completely British food hall.
Yeah.
Which could work in somewhere like London, for example.
Yeah.
So you don't see lots of that.
No, I had a Yorkshire burrito yesterday at Box.
Yeah. So I think there's a gap in that market. Yeah.
Maybe it's coming.
Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, I mean, so great working on this project in Wigan. Of course, they're famous for the Wigan kebab.
Oh yeah.
Which is a pie in a bun, which is a revelation.
Yeah, right. A pie in a bun.
Yeah, okay. So that's it. So for me, if I was going to do something, I'd probably do something British based.
Yeah.
And would be a take on British classics that were easily eatable, because I think you'd get lots of tourists coming to food halls, because food halls, of course, the perfect place to test the cuisine of a whole country.
Yeah.
So I would probably, if it was me personally, I would do a British focus.
Scores high on the tourism chart as well.
You never get Sunday roast in a food hall.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So if you could create a small kind of elements of a Sunday roast, I reckon it wouldn't do every day, but it would work all the time.
Yeah. That sort of like traditional English home style.
I mean, there's so many great things within that that you could do that would transfer across to a food hall really well.
Yeah. Good answer. Dookie. That was
cool.
Great. Thanks for taking the time to
chat with
us. You speak very well.